Our New Jersey was hit hard by Superstorm Sandy. Many residents had to flee or be rescued from the rising ocean waters, which damaged buildings, roads, and power to this coastal community. Its popular and famous boardwalk is a pile of rubble. We asked Bellmawr's mayor, Matt Doherty, to tell us about his plans to rebuild his town, and he joins us by phone. And Matt Doherty, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Mark.
So just how extensive is the damage from Superstorm Sandy?
Well, the storm surge from Sandy completely destroyed 1.2 miles of our boardwalk, pushing it as far inland as six blocks.
Wow.
At the same time, the storm surge left one quarter square mile of the town underwater that needed to get pumped out. We brought pumps in from all over the country. We were very aggressive about our cleanup effort, and at our height, we were pumping 60,000 gallons of water a minute from our town back into the Atlantic Ocean. But we've transitioned from the recovery phase into rebuilding, and we've actually gone out to bid already for a brand new boardwalk to be constructed this winter and spring in time for Memorial Day weekend of this coming summer.
I know there are about, 6,000 people that live year-round in Bellmawr? About 6,000 people that live year-round in Bellmawr?
Total year-round population is about 5,800.
Right. And have they all those people been able to come home, or are some still displaced?
Some are still displaced as they repair either the wind damage caused to their homes or the flooding. You know, there's a lot of electrical work that needs to be done on the first floors of homes and also in the basements.
I was also reading about pretty dramatic rescues when Sandy was bearing down on Bellmawr.
Leading up to the storm, we issued a state of emergency with a mandatory evacuation, and most people did heed that evacuation. However, there were some that stayed behind to ride it out, and we ended up having to save over 200 families, ranging in ages from 18 months old to 94 years old. And that was primarily done by our Bellmawr Water Rescue Team, an all-volunteer group that were out the night of the storm, pitch black, rising waters, 50-mile-an-hour winds, swimming up to people's homes and to the second floor of their homes, putting them in boats, kayaks, anything we could get our hands on to get them out safely. And because of those heroic efforts, we did not have one fatality, and we did not have one major injury.
That's pretty extraordinary. Has power then been largely restored? It sounds like some people are still rebuilding and perhaps don't have power yet, but is it largely back at Bellmawr?
Yeah, we probably have 99% have power. The ones that don't, right now it's too dangerous for them to have power. Mm-hmm. We did have one structure fire because power went back to a house prematurely before the electrical could be inspected as safe, and it wasn't safe. Luckily, no one was home at the time. It was a home that someone had evacuated from, but it was a significant fire, and it made us aware that the last thing we need are massive fires on top of devastation we already had. So we're playing it safe when returning electricity to these homes.
Would it be fair to say that Superstorm Sandy, as it's called, was the most most powerful storm to hit Bellmawr in recent history?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, leading up to it, we had conference calls with the governor's office, and on those conference calls were members of the National Weather Service, and they told us what to expect. And they said, and I'll never forget the language, the representative said that Sandy would be a storm like no one alive had ever seen before.
Wow.
And he was dead on.
There was a building I was reading about that's been on the beach for about 90 years that was destroyed by Sandy?
Yeah, we had a pavilion, 13th Avenue Pavilion, that at one time was a McDonald's, and most recently was a very nice high-end restaurant called Matisse that had stood since 1929, but the storm surge itself just rendered it structurally unsound and unfortunately had to come down. But we are looking to rebuild that building on the same footprint by the summer of 2014, so we can try to maintain the character of the beachfront as much as possible.
Why is it important to rebuild the boardwalk?
Really three reasons. First, Bellmawr has had a boardwalk every summer since 1875. It's part of the character. It's an integral part of the character of the town. It's where people go to walk, socialize, meet and gather. At the same time, without a boardwalk, we won't draw the same number of tourists that our businesses rely on. And all the businesses in Bellmawr and up and down the Jersey Shore are all small business owners. There's no large corporations here at the shore. They're all owned by middle-class families. And for them to be without income for a whole summer would be like someone on a salary being out of a job for a full year. It would be devastating to not only them but also to the town, because those businesses would deteriorate. And lastly, you know, whether or not tourists come, a town like Bellmawr is going to have the same expenses. We're still going to have lifeguards and extra police, extra maintenance of the beach to maintain it during the summer. But if tourists don't come because we don't have a boardwalk, the shortfall in revenue will have to be borne solely by the property taxpayers of Bellmawr. There's no federal funds, state funds, or county funds to offset a loss in revenue. So it's important for to maintain our tax level. It's important for our businesses, and it's important for the character of our town. And in a larger part, I believe that, you know, after a storm like this and the devastation that everyone's seen, that it would be important for the Jersey Shore and New Jersey as a whole to have a town like Bellmawr rebuild its boardwalk and be a bright spot after a tragedy like this.
And are there plans to rebuild this boardwalk so that it will withstand the next superstorm that comes up the East Coast?
Absolutely. The previous boardwalk was built over many decades, 70s, 80s, 90s. Some of the pilings, just to give you an idea, were anywhere from 6 feet long to 15 feet long. The new pilings we're going to put in are going to be at least 25 feet long. Mm. It's going to be built to withstand Hurricane Sandy. Our engineers have designed it, and then just because I'm not nearly as smart as an engineer, I had another engineering firm check our engineering firm's designs to verify what they were saying, and they said that it is accurate, that it's being built to code and to hurricane standards. And you can see on our beachfront, there are many homes that got destroyed were older homes. The newer homes, the ones that are built up to, you know, 2012 standards, the ones that are more expensive to build because they built up the code, they survived intact, undamaged.
What would be the cost of rebuilding the boardwalk?
Right now we're estimating the boardwalk itself would be $17 million. And we've gone out to a competitive bid, and we're looking to take the lowest bidder to keep the cost as reasonable as possible.
Can Bellmawr pay that bill? Afford to pay that bill?
Bellmawr could never afford to pay that bill. We are partnering with FEMA, and according to their guidelines and on numerous conference calls with them, we'll be reimbursed at least 75% of that. And the remaining part, we're going to have to take out a 20-year bond for, and it'll be charged against the Bellmawr Beach Utility, which is separate from the town budget. So all the revenue that comes from beach badge sales would go into repaying those loans, repaying that bond. So if you don't use the beach, you don't pay for it. But if you do, then you'd be you know, helping us repay the loan over the next 20 years.
You testified last week before the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee in New Jersey. I guess making the same pitch that we're hearing on the radio today.
You know, from the state, you know, what we need is for them to work with us as far as our rebuilding effort, and not tie us up with some bureaucratic regulations that may otherwise stand in the way. I mean, this isn't new construction near the water. This is simply replacing what was existing, and then also not to, you know, we ask them as we go through this process not to attach any strings to FEMA financing and funding as we rebuild this. You know, let us just rebuild our towns and rebuild the Jersey Shore that so many middle-class families in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania love.
And what was their response? Do you feel like you're going to get cooperation on what you say Bellmawr needs?
I think so. You know, I think from President Obama to Governor Christie to our state legislature, looks like this may be, you know, one of the few times when It doesn't matter what party you are or what level of government you represent. Everyone is in the same boat and rowing in the same direction. And you know, if there's ever a time I think we can have confidence in our elected leaders to do the right thing, it's now. And I have a lot of confidence in that. And I believe that that's what it's going to take for a town like Bellmawr and the rest of the Jersey Shore to come back. It'll never be the same. Absolutely never be the same again. But it will be a place for people to come and enjoy once more this summer and on into the future.
Well, Matt, let me get Terry from Doylestown to join our conversation. And Terry, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Mr. Doherty. Boy, you got more than you bargained for as mayor, huh? Holy cow. Listen, you said it was going to cost about $17 million to rebuild the boardwalk, which is a lot of money, but, you know, honestly, I don't find it shocking. What I want to know, if you please, is that $17 million, is that the pilings and the flooring, or is that all that plus the businesses? And if not the businesses that were on the boardwalk, where does the money come to rebuild those businesses? And what about the property ownership? You know, how did that work? Who owned, when you own a business on the boardwalk, do you rent that square footage from the city? And what happens to all the people who owned businesses? Do they have leases? How's that breaking down financially? Who's responsible for what?
Terry, all good questions. And go ahead, Matt Doherty.
Sure. The $17 million is our estimate to rebuild just the boardwalk, no buildings included. But that includes the pilings. We're estimating about 3,100 pilings, over 14,000 boards, just to give you an idea, over 50,000 screws to put this entire thing together. It is an expensive proposition, but it's something that's that we couldn't do without. Regarding the buildings, in the past they'd always been owned and operated by the town, and then rented out to private concessionaires. You know, we're going to look at doing that, but we've also been very successful in town doing land leases with private entities where they come in, they put in their own capital to build a building, they do it on private land, or they do it on public land, and then they pay us a land lease of anywhere from 20 to 30 years. So, you know, as they depreciate that asset at year zero with the IRS, that asset should be worth, or at year 30, asset should be depreciated to $0. So there's a few different options. We do not believe there's any possibility of having those buildings back in time for this coming summer, but we plan on having them back in time for summer of 2014.
And we have to say goodbye to you, but I know that you want this boardwalk built by Memorial Day 2013. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's vital for us to do that. And we're going to put all our energy and be aggressive to make it happen.
Well, good luck, and thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that's you're welcome. And that's Mayor Matt Doherty, Mayor of Bellmawr, New Jersey, the first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents a world premiere adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, now through December 30th. The timeless classic gets a merry retelling by Tony Award-winning playwright Patrick Barlow, the creator of Broadway's The 39 Steps. Five actors portray more than 20 characters in this highly physical reimagining of the transformation of Ebenezer Scrooge. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or delawaretheater.org.
This week on This American Life.
Piney is sort of this mysterious figure in our life.
I know that Piney has a lot of physical ailments.
I've heard he has a team of doctors.
I mean, my first impression was just like Piney is misunderstood.
Piney is my dog, and those are the people who I work with who do not seem to understand him. Animal sacrifices this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
The Wilmington University College of Education supports WHYY and offers a Master of Education program in school leadership. This NCATE-accredited program for aspiring school leaders addresses research, theory, and practice related to effective schools, teaching and learning, and school reform. The program emphasizes translating educational theory into practice. Wilmington University courses begin every 8 weeks at locations throughout the region. More at wilmu.edu/education degrees.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We're talking about the politics and price tag for rebuilding New Jersey's shore post-Sandy. And joining us now is Mary Ann Spoto. She's a State House reporter for the Star-Ledger of Newark, New Jersey. She's been covering the state's response to Superstorm Sandy, which destroyed and damaged a number of shore towns and parks. She's the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. And Mary Ann Spoto, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open. Any questions or comments you might have, and particularly if you live in New Jersey, we do want to hear from you. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Mary Ann, I noticed that the governor of New Jersey keeps increasing the costs of Superstorm Sandy. What is the cost, at least as of today?
As of today, they're talking $36.9 billion.
And they have been revising that upwards over the last couple of weeks.
That's the set. He gave a preliminary estimate about a week and a half ago, then upped it. This is the first time he's upped it. We do expect at least another increase or so as they start going through the numbers.
And do you know what that $36 billion entails or includes?
A lot of it is overtime costs. They took into consideration the shore and how much revenue will be lost from that, property tax revenue. It runs the whole gamut.
We were just talking to the mayor of Bellmawr, New Jersey, hit hard by Sandy. And I know you have traveled up and down the New Jersey coastline. What are the hardest hit areas?
The hardest hit areas are the Bayshore area, the Union Beach area around there, and also northern Ocean County, where you have Manaloking, Ortley Beach, Bayhead, Manasquan, those areas.
And why were they more vulnerable to this storm?
A lot of them had older homes, and as some officials in the state have said, they were not protected by the dunes. They didn't have a really good protective dune system there. So that allowed the ocean to breach early and just do its damage.
We did some programs about Superstorm Sandy, including ones about the dunes that were protective, and it seemed as if the dunes that were bigger and wider were more protective than other dunes or no dunes at all.
That's what the governor has been saying, and he's now been saying that he wants to see engineered beaches all along the 127 miles of coastline in New Jersey.
And the idea of engineered beaches is replenishment, rebuilding, or building, perhaps, these dunes for the first time?
Yes, yes. The Army Corps has done a big section of New Jersey beaches, but certainly not all of them. And some fared well. Some towns fared well, like Barnegat Light on Long Beach Island. They had natural dunes that had built up over the years. They were wide and they were high. And Seaside Park the same way, and they didn't nearly have as much damage as the other towns did.
I know for a time something like 3 million people living in New Jersey were without electricity. I have actually friends who live in New Jersey, even have a business there, and they were out of electricity for a week, almost 2 weeks.
So even some homeowners were like that, and there's a hearing going on today of the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee in Trenton, where they're hearing from the utilities and the state's Board of Public Utilities to hear about their response and what things can be done better for any kind of storms in the future.
So they don't know why it took so long, but they just know that it did.
It wasn't so much what took so long. The people were more frustrated with the lack of communications from the utility companies. People would be told, oh, your electricity could come on tomorrow, could come on the next day. So people stayed in their homes. And then it got cold, and people were just staying, hoping that their electricity would come on the next day or the next day after that. And pretty soon, they're there for a week or 10 days.
Waiting for the electricity to come on.
Exactly.
How many people are still displaced in New Jersey?
There's still no exact estimate yet, but people are thinking there's still thousands of people that are displaced. They're either living in hotels, living with relatives, living with friends. There still has been no account of that yet.
I'm thinking of all the trash and debris that needed to be cleaned up in the last month or so. Is that something that you've covered?
I've done some. The DEP commissioner, the Environmental Protection Commissioner, was before the Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee on Monday and said that that FEMA has estimated that the debris will be 6.2 million cubic yards.
Whoa.
From the storm.
See, I don't know what that means. Do you?
I don't know. He didn't have an idea of where that puts it in terms of Katrina, but it's certainly more than New Jersey's ever seen. A town like Toms River, the mayor says it's costing them $1 million a week just for debris removal.
And I'm assuming everything from tree branches to soaked sofas to things hauled out from someone's garage or basement.
Exactly. They put them out there at the curb, and they get it out of there, and a couple of days later, it's all back. You know, there's a new stack of debris out there again, as if the others hadn't even been taken away before.
One of the, I guess, iconic images late in the presidential election season was the image of Governor Christie and President Obama touring the New Jersey coastline, and an image, I guess, of bipartisanship. Is that holding in New Jersey, or are you seeing evidence of some bipartisan cooperation dealing with Sandy and its aftermath?
It's a little early to tell on that because there haven't been any legislative bills proposed, any major ones yet, but the governor certainly has been going around at all his press conferences saying that he is making a bipartisan effort. He constantly talks about his cooperation with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's a Democrat. He talks about the legislature, you know, working with them and trying not to make this a partisan issue, especially with the upcoming elections next year.
And I guess the idea is trying to make a case, what, largely to the federal government to help New Jersey deal with Superstorm Sandy.
Yes, that we're all working on this together because they recognize that if they're fighting among themselves, it's not going to do any good for New Jersey.
And it sounds like normally, under, I guess, normal circumstances, FEMA pays about 75% of the cost, but New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is asking for FEMA to pay 90%. What's his argument?
The other day, he just actually put in a bid to have FEMA pay the entire cost.
Oh, the entire, up to 100%?
Yes. And he says he's basing this on precedents from Katrina and how FEMA dealt with the folks in the Gulf Coast for that, and he has said all along that he wants no less for the people of New Jersey.
Wow. Let me quickly reintroduce you, and that's Marianne Spoto. She's a State House reporter for the Star-Ledger of Newark, New Jersey, and in the last month or so has been covering the state's response to Superstorm Sandy, as we know, damaged a number of shore towns and parks along the east coast there of New Jersey. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to get to our callers, but is Governor Christie getting high marks from the residents of New Jersey for his handling of this storm?
He's getting very high marks from this. There was a survey done about a week ago. That would have been a month into the storm, and he got very, very high marks in the 70%. It's something that no governor has seen in New Jersey.
And was that bipartisan support?
Yes, that was bipartisan support.
And do you think this is where his tough talk has worked to his and the state's benefit?
I don't know if it's so much his tough talk, but they liked to see he is a very energetic person, and he was there from the beginning with Sandy and has worked, has been out there a lot, traveling everywhere, so his face has been seen, his voice has been heard. People had fears at this time, and he could at least for the short term put that to rest, which gave him high marks for that.
And how an elected official handles a storm, snowstorm, hurricane, earthquake can make or break their career.
Well, he took a little heat. This would have been two winters ago when New Jersey had a very bad snowstorm the day after Christmas, and he was on vacation with his family in Florida, and didn't come back, and he took a lot of heat for that. So maybe some of that was in the back of his mind for subsequent storms, but certainly he wouldn't have done any. I don't think he would have done anything like that for Sandy. He would have, you know, from all that he said, he most likely would have been here no matter what.
Well, Marion Spoto, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Beverly from Bradley Beach, New Jersey. And Beverly, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Oh, I would add that Governor Christie did a good job on Saturday Night Live also. No. I live in Philadelphia, but I also live at Bradley Beach, which is two towns up from Belmar.
Yes.
We didn't suffer the degree of damage that Belmar did. Our boardwalk is actually made of paving stones, and the structures certainly were damaged, but the boardwalk itself is still there. Your guest talked about the town with dune system. We had a system of man-made dunes made from recycled Christmas trees, which built up the dunes, and that seemed to help keep the water down, too. I was wondering if some of these towns that have to be built will consider some of these methods.
Beverly, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Marion Spoto, I'm assuming that, these coastal community mayors are talking to each other and trying to figure out what's the best way to protect the shoreline.
The mayors are talking about that, but there's also, again, there's going to be another Senate Budget and Appropriations Committee hearing that has to do with the dunes. They're just devoting all that to the dunes, and they want to take a look at what's there, what needs to be done. If something works, should they change it, or are there other methods? But they have talked about, environmental protection officials have said that the height of the dunes created by the Army Corps of Engineer, 150 feet wide and 22 feet tall, have seemed to work. So I would think that they would at least want some dunes similar to that size.
You did a story about, looks like a conflict on Long Beach Island, quoting the Long Beach Island Township Mayor Joseph Mancini and his frustration with some private homeowners that don't want to put dunes in front of their houses because they don't want to spoil the view, and that has created problems for some of these communities.
That's been a source of contention for a while on Long Beach Island, where Harvey Cedars actually condemned some of those strips of oceanfront property where they need to have the dune, where they need to place the dunes. That had gone through through court, and a court said to the homeowner, you are entitled to compensation for your loss of view, and the homeowners were awarded $375,000.
Wow.
It's still working its way through the court system, but Mayor Mancini in Long Beach Township, seeing that, had said, I don't want to go that route. He was trying to get all the homeowners to sign the easements without having to go to court, but at the same time, he wasn't offering them any compensation. Harvey Cedars at least had offered $300 for the strip. But the Mayor Mancini said, we can't even afford that for all the homes that we need to do. And he was hoping that the residents would be able to do that in the spirit of cooperation, and
sure,
we'll see what happens with that.
And it sounds like a bit of a showdown, and perhaps with Sandy bringing some urgency to that particular issue. Let me see what Donna from Sweetwater, New Jersey has to say. And Donna, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just really wanted to commend the officials of Seaside Park, where we have a small cottage, a house, one house away from the bay. So we sustained a lot of damage, but they are doing something that I would urge other townships maybe to do, and that is they're sorting through all the stuff that's put out at curbside. They're not letting scavengers in. They are salvaging the metal for in order to offset the tipping fees for the things that do have to go into the landfill, and they're recycling what they can. I mean, this whole event was such a tragedy for the earth that it made me feel somewhat better that my small town was doing its part in trying to not landfill everything.
Well, Donna, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Marianne Spoto, you want to add to that?
Some towns are doing that. I know that Brick is doing that. But the DEP commissioner the other day at the Senate hearing did acknowledge that not all towns are doing that, and there may be some things like paint or anything else that may be landfilled. They said their issue right now is just getting the stuff off the streets. So some towns are doing it, some are not. You know, that's hopefully, like your caller said, some more will do that.
Donna, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You have reported that the James Lee Witt Associates are going to be consulting on some of these recovery efforts?
Yes.
And I guess providing, and we should say that James Witt was a FEMA director, I guess, back in the Clinton administration.
Yes.
Why the need for this organization, or what's the argument for the organization?
The governor also appointed what we in the press are calling a storm czar. Mark Frazan used to work for Governor Christie when Governor Christie was at the U.S. Attorney's Office. He was also briefly in the Attorney General's office here in the state before he went to private practice, to the private sector, I should say, in August, September, around that time. This is their way of trying to get as much money as they can that is available out there for recovery and make sure that it is done in a comprehensive way and a cohesive way. We still have to learn more yet about Witt Associates' role.
And when you talk about money, I'm assuming money, what, from the federal government, money from insurance companies?
They're looking at everything. They're looking at foundations anywhere they can get money.
Is there talk, and we're almost out of time here, about retreat, the state actually buying up flood-prone property and just basically saying it doesn't make sense to keep on rebuilding some of these areas?
They're doing this, as they have done all along, on a voluntary basis. We have what's called the Blue Acres Program, where there's money that is set aside for that. But this now brings it to the forefront for people, for homeowners who are in flood-prone areas, take another look and say, hey, I might benefit from that now. But the state is not mandating anything like that.
Well, on that note, my thanks to you, Marianne Spoto, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. She's a state reporter for the Star Ledger of Newark, New Jersey. Got ahead of myself there. And she's been covering the state's response to Superstorm Sandy. We have Howard Marlowe waiting in the wings. He has worked as a lobbyist on behalf of coastal communities. And we'll be taking more calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA's Office of Admissions is hosting an open house on Saturday, December 15th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. with information about the 3 undergraduate and 2 graduate programs of study at the nation's first museum and fine arts school. PAFA's curriculum focuses on the following areas of fine arts study: painting, drawing, printmaking, and sculpture. Info at 215-972-7625 or admissions at pafa.edu.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The militant group Hamas may have emerged stronger from the recent conflict with Israel, but the group's future may depend more on the long-term outcome of the revolutions in Egypt and Syria. Also, a kitchen confidential for hotels. A former parking valet gives readers a behind-the-scenes look. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington supports WHYY. When someone is injured or ill, a long wait in the ER can be damaging. According to the Centers for Disease Control, average ER wait times are nearly 1 hour. St. Francis's Emergency Services team has worked to reduce the time to get patients into treatment rooms or to give them direct care to 30 minutes or less. More at stfrancishealthcare.org. At St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington, we specialize in you.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And in this hour of the show, we're looking at and talking about the politics and price tag for rebuilding New Jersey's popular shore after the devastation of Superstorm Sandy. And joining us now is Howard Marlowe. He's worked as a lobbyist on behalf of coastal communities for many years now, founded the American Coastal Coalition. He runs the K Street lobbying firm of Marlowe and Company and is president of the American League of Lobbyists. And Howard Marlowe, nice to have you with us from Radio Times.
Thanks very much for having me, Morgan.
What's your interest in coastal communities?
Well, our firm represents coastal communities. It also represents the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association, which deals with policies affecting coastal communities. And basically what we have tried to do over the years is a couple of things. One is the Federal Beach Program operates because local communities, in the case of New Jersey, it's the state, making requests out of Congress to provide the funds to do a beach nourishment project, engineered beach, as you've discussed in your program. And it takes about 10 years to do a study to determine that there is a benefit-cost ratio that brings back more than $1 in storm damage reduction benefits for every dollar of federal tax money put into that. New Jersey is one of two states in the country that has a dedicated fund to match the federal cost share, and therefore what we have tried to do is to, one, get the funds for beach communities, but also to get policies which are encouraging beach communities to have sane and what we call sensible kinds of growth policies along the coast and try to reduce risk as much as possible.
Governor Christie is asking essentially for the federal government, I guess for FEMA, to pay the full freight for the cost of rebuilding after Sandy, something like $36 billion. Do you think that's a request that fits in today's tough economic times?
Well, as you said, it matches what was done for Katrina. And I might add that this is a devastating storm. People who are still, as you know very well, people are still out of electricity, displaced from homes and the like. Katrina got a lot of attention. This storm, which is not a hurricane, it's less than a hurricane, but it is more devastating in many respects, has off the newspaper because off the headlines because it's interrupted by the election day. Now, in terms of the coast, anything that is a federally constructed beach project, it's the Corps of Engineers' responsibility to replace it. And under law, that is at 100% federal expense already.
I wonder, though, whether someone in, because we are talking about taxpayer money here, someone in Wyoming should pay for the rebuilding of a boardwalk in Belmar, New Jersey. We began by talking with the mayor of Belmar, New Jersey, in this hour of Radio Times. What do you say to that person in Wyoming?
Well, first of all, federal money doesn't get used to build or repair boardwalks. In terms of at least the Corps of Engineers program, you renourish a beach and you don't pay for the boardwalk. What you do is you protect the boardwalk and you protect the other infrastructure that's behind it. The person in Wyoming, we did a study of a couple of places in the country, and basically people from all 50 states are coming to the beaches of New Jersey. So, one, that's one reason why. But two, the beaches of New Jersey, I can't give you a figure, but we know in the country that we are producing easily $30 billion into the federal treasury from taxes on businesses, federal taxes on business income, federal taxes on the workers' income who work in those businesses. So, and we only invest $100 million a year at most at the federal level into beach nourishment. that's not a bad return. Mm.
And that's that cost-benefit ratio that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, it actually goes beyond that because we're now taking into account the tax revenues. The Congress doesn't permit even taking into account tax revenues. It says, let's take a look at the property, not just immediately adjacent to the bore, to the ocean, but let's take a look at one to two rows behind that and take a look at what the damages would be and how we can avoid those damages. What's happened in New Jersey, when you had those dunes in a Corps of Engineers project, the dunes worked. They protected property from being damaged. We have in places like Manaloking where the folks didn't want the dunes because they didn't want the dunes to interfere with their view of the ocean. Well, they now have, unfortunately, a very good view of the ocean. And they didn't want to have public access. We require public access. We require public parking at the federal level. Some people don't want that. And if they don't want it, then you know, they're going to get the kinds of effects that they got from Superstorm Sandy,
which is, of course, a water in their basement and the loss of their I guess their lovely view. But should property owners, just picking up on that, and then we'll get to our callers here. But should property owners be required to have dunes built in front of their property, not just to protect their property, but also to protect their neighbor's property?
I think so, but at the federal level, we can't require that under the Constitution. Zoning and other requirements like that are up to the states and local governments. What I do think is that you ought not to be able to allowed to spend federal money on doing a beach project unless there is a plan in place for the entire region to have their beaches protected, because you can't do spotty stuff. We saw that in Long Beach Island. We see that up in the Manasquan area. When you have spotty protection, what you're doing is you're putting all the people who have agreed to put in dunes at risk of losing their sand and therefore their protection. So something is going to have to be done. And I might add that that the two senators in New Jersey and the congressional delegation are very active, not just in getting money, but in looking at what can be done in the future to build smarter and to try to get the level of protection that's going to be needed in the future.
Do you think insurance companies will do, perhaps, or maybe even working in tandem with the government, will do things to make smarter development along coastal communities?
I hope so, because we really need to do something. And one of your guests in the previous program that you had talked about retreat.
Yes.
It's not practical, and two, it's a huge cost. But we can do something to, one, make sure that people are not developing on areas that are undeveloped, and two, when their homes are destroyed or seriously damaged, that they're not building bigger. Perhaps they're building smarter and moving back further. And some states require that already. So I think that we have to take a look at policies like that and work with the insurance industry, because definitely they have a very good piece of leverage which they can use. And we've been talking about that here in Washington in the last couple of days, about reaching out to the insurance industry and also to actually to investment companies like Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, because they actually have investments that they sell where people, as usual, are gambling on actually not having a storm.
Right.
And, you know, so there are a lot of possibilities here to get things moving in a better direction.
And those gambling practices were part of the financial collapse of a couple of years ago.
I'm afraid so, yes.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you, and I do want to get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Howard Marlowe, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, he's worked as a lobbyist on behalf of coastal communities for many years, founded the American Coastal Coalition, which has merged with the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association, runs the K Street lobbying firm Marlowe and Company, is president of the American League of Lobbyists, and actually went to the Wharton School. Is that right?
Absolutely. And
proudly so.
And I hope I have some of the folks there listening today.
Well, we'll find out. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Louise from Clayton, New Jersey, to join our conversation. And Louise, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. The sand barriers are just that. Historically, before the colonization of white men, the Indians valued the sand barriers and canoed out to the beach for fish and clams, and then came back to the mainland. And I'm suggesting something pretty radical, and that our sand barriers beaches be made a national park and follow the good example of Venice, Italy, and Venice, Florida, where there are parking lots, you pay for a ticket for access to the beach with lockers and changing rooms, and you can get beach chairs and umbrellas, and the people from Nebraska can still come and enjoy it.
Well, Louise, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me give our guest, Howard Marlowe, a chance to respond to that. Makes sense to you?
In many ways. And Louise, our firm represents Venice, Florida, so I know what you're talking about. It's a beautiful community down there. The fact is that somebody has to pay. And we are going to have to look not just to the federal government to do that. If we can have people who are actually using the beach, and certainly there are a number of communities in New Jersey which have beach tags and the like, and I believe Belmar, where the mayor was on earlier, is one of those that has beach tags. We need to find ways to pay for this, because the Europeans, in there, at least when they were not bankrupt, put in $3 billion, as in B, as in billion, into their beaches a year, whereas we put in $100 million with an M for mother. And we can't necessarily afford $3 billion, but we can do is start to partner with private interests, both the hotels, the airlines, and everybody else who benefits from the beaches, those who use the beaches, and perhaps, as we talked about a moment ago, the insurance companies and investors who profit also from the beaches. I think that Louise's idea of making them all a national park would be fantastic.
Oh, Louise, thanks for the call. Let's see what Joanne from Wayne has to say. And Joanne, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Yes, I think making the beaches a national park is a fantastic idea, but it wasn't my idea. Going back to the beach tags, I think that all the owners should pay for the beach because they benefit by the beach being there, and not the user that comes down once a week or so, because I'm sure every single one of them has rented a house in New Jersey. And number three, I don't understand Governor Christie's call for 100% funding from FEMA. Although, believe me, I think Governor Christie did a fabulous job. Isn't it sort of against his Republican Party to ask the Fed for help?
Well, and that's always been an interesting question for me, and I don't know, Howard Marlowe, if you've wrestled with that as well, if you're a critic of the government, and then as we see, when there is a natural disaster, it doesn't matter what party you're from, you turn to the federal government for help.
Yeah, it happens every time, and you know, those here in Washington who say, well, we don't have enough money to pay for this. Well, we've had enough money. We've found enough money to pay for every other disaster that we've had. I can't speak to the issue of 75% or 100% for FEMA because it's not an area of expertise, but I agree with the governor that there is certainly a lot of precedent for that. Again, along the coast, the law already requires the Corps of Engineers to build beaches back to their pre-storm condition at 100% federal cost. That presumes that Congress provides the money to do that. And so far, Congress has not done that, nor has the administration called for that. So it's still up in the air as to what's going to happen.
And I think what Louise was referring to, clearly you've listened to some of the shows that we've done about this, the idea that barrier islands are not static. And the difficulty of building along barrier islands is that they moved. They're moved by storms. They move naturally.
Well, barrier islands will move naturally so long as there's no development. If there's development on there, then they're not going to move naturally. And I think Dr. Pilkey, you had on
yes.
an earlier show, is famous in this area, but he's got to recognize that since the pilgrims arrived and people started building ports and creating navigation channels and the like, those things created a lot of things which get in the way of Mother Nature. We just got to accept the fact and see what we can do to look ahead to the fact that we have both storms that are going to be continuing. We've had, I think, three major storms on the East Coast in the last 20 years. That is a lot to be having. It will happen more. We have sea level rise that is going on. We have got to do something. We have no national policy in cooperation with the states to deal with that. And I think it's going to be very important that this storm not just be a passing storm, but it be something that It gives us the opportunity to create policies that protect us better and reduce risk and reduce loss to property and lives.
Let me see if I can squeeze one more caller on. We have Jake from Hamilton Township. Jake, make it snappy if you don't mind. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to find out if anyone has given consideration to creating a carbon tax to help pay for not only damages along the shore, but also the drought damage that was caused this summer and fire damage the previous summer. All of these things that are being caused by the fact that we're burning carbon, putting it in the air, causing global warming, we ought to pay for it.
Well, Jake, it's in. Go ahead, Howard Marlowe.
Jake, the answer is yes. In basically in an infrastructure bank proposal that's been around from the time that President Obama was a senator, but has a lot of traction, there would be a discussion of doing that and using funds from a carbon tax and from other sources to help pay for not only beaches but other infrastructure.
And Howard, we're almost out of time here, but do you find a receptive audience in Washington for what we've been talking about?
Oh, very much so. We've had a lot of support for coastal beaches, and not just because they are beaches for recreation, but because of the storm damage value that they provide. So I think that there will be a lot of concern. And again, you've got a great congressional delegation that is working on making sure that that concern stays with us as we try to deal with the recovery.
Well, Howard Marlowe, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. He runs the K Street lobbying firm Marlowe and Company, and he's president of the American League of Lobbyists. The third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Check us out online. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. And do stay with us. We've got another hour. We'll be right back. Coming up, meet two of the authors of a new report calling for the